This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. Chauncey DeVega is going to be with us in just a moment. We're asking the question, how do we prepare for the end of the Trump presidency, among other things. Rick Wilson will be with us. He's got a new book out called Everything Trump Touches Dies. Yes, he's a Republican. And Paul Levy's going to drop by in our third hour about quantum physics and Wetiko, a concept that, we'll talk about it in the third hour. And there's a pile of news out there. But let's start out with Chauncey DeVega. Chauncey is the political essayist and commentator, contributor with Salon. He's got a new piece up on Salon, in fact, about Nazism and Trumpism. He's also the host of the Chauncey DeVega Show podcast. His website, Chauncey DeVega, DEVEGA.com. And you can tweet him at Chauncey DeVega. Chauncey, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure to have you.
It's,
to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. I wanted to start with this piece that you wrote, Are White People Ready to Bail on Democracy? These researchers say the danger is real. Can you set that up for us, please?
Well, we know, looking at American history, that racism is a dagger of sorts at the heart of American democracy. And again, from Trump's hate rallies to his overt racist and nativist speech, we're actually starting to get a lot of good empirical data. And one of the things we're learning, again, from political scientists, sociologists, and others, is that Trump voters and white Americans who are racially resentful in general are much more likely to believe that we should cancel elections, that we should suppress the, that we should restrict the free press, that if Donald Trump basically ordered a rollback of democracy, that they would go along with it. And why is that? Because of social dominance behavior and anxiety about America's changing demographics. So unfortunately, we have too many white Americans who are willing to make a bargain, basically saying, you know what, it's a zero-sum game. And if we can't run the show to American democracy, then it can be damned.
Yeah. And so what do we do with that? I mean, Kamala Harris over the weekend talked about, I'm not afraid of identity politics. James Baldwin was asked about this. I don't know the year, but probably back in the 60s. And here is what he had to say. I'd just love to get your take on his comments, too. He was first asked by a commentator. We're not hearing any audio here, Nate or Sean. I don't know who's got the audio. Okay. Anyway, Chauncey, we'll just continue here. What do we do with this? I mean, how do we address white people about this issue?
Well, I mean, as you and I have talked about repeatedly, we need to state the facts plainly. And the obvious fact is that America has only been a democracy on paper for 50 years, and that's since the end of the Civil Rights Movement, at least formally in terms of the popular imagination. So in terms of thinking about history, history can move forward. But in terms of American democracy, it's been a very, very slow march, and we can lose the little democracy that we have very quickly. So the easy answer would be, you know, in a perfect world, we fix our educational system. We make sure that we have a true We the People democracy. We work to create multiracial, cross-class alliances at every level of American life. But if someone were to give me the big bucks and say, hey, Chauncey, man, what would you tell the Democrats to do in terms of strategy? What would you tell liberals and progressives? I'd say stop wasting your time trying to win over Trump voters. We have a ton of data, again, showing us that these folks are authoritarian, that they are resistant to cosmopolitanism, they want to live in the past and not the present. And, you know, I've spoken to some of the leading experts on Trumpism. I go out and instead of, you know, working with conjecture like so many of the talking heads do, I want to try to figure out what we know empirically. And what I'm seeing over the years of studying Trump and Trumpism and working on my own book is that Trump voters cannot be reached. We need to work on those Americans who are on the fence and those other Americans who simply didn't vote. Yeah. These Trump cultists are a lost cause, and we need to stop worrying about them.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. Yesterday, there's a documentary. It's called Documenting Hate, Charlottesville. It's going to premiere on PBS on the 7th, which is tomorrow, and on your local public broadcasting TV station. And in that documentary, they're making the case that the Charlottesville, there's about 500 of these right-wing white supremacist protesters in Charlottesville, and that group kind of split into three. And one of those three groups is out still protesting out in public. We saw this in Portland this weekend. Another part of that group, and you know, I don't know the percentages here, but another part of that group has gone into more of kind of a Koch brothers mode, for lack of a better way to describe it. You know, recruiting on college campuses, trying to get inside political parties, you know, becoming political or Republican campaign chairman, or you know, within the Republican Party anyway. And a third group has split off and said, we're going to start killing people, and we're going to do it quietly, essentially. And you know, we're not trying to be the Weather Underground. We're not, you know, trying to be famous. We're just going to start killing people. And yesterday, at 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday in Madison, Wisconsin, the progressive radio station there, WORT, somebody walked in and shot a guy. And, you know, he's still alive, but he was shot. How does all this inform you? And how would you tie this back to your current piece in Salon about how the Nazis dealt with this and how we should be dealing with it?
Well, I think, again, we always need to speak truth to power. And we've had too many folks in the mainstream corporate news media, because they've given Trump $5 billion in free advertising, who are willing to still normalize this man. So the first thing we need to understand is, when Trump calls the news media, journalists and reporters, enemies of the people, well, that's Stalinist rhetoric that, again, is part of a trend we've seen over the decades with right-wing Republicans and others using eliminationist rhetoric against Democrats, liberals, non-whites, immigrants, and others. So we need to, again, check that box off. And thinking about my piece today, again, saying, you know what, it's both reasonable and appropriate to compare Donald Trump and Trumpism to Hitler and Nazism. You don't want to wait until it's too late. Because once it's too late, there's nothing that can be done. We have all these folks wringing their hands saying, well, is Trump like Hitler? Oh, is that a fair historical analogy? The man is certainly a fascist. He's certainly a racial authoritarian. We have a ton of data about that. And he certainly is, again, holding a dagger at the heart of American democracy. And with Trump and his voters and his supporters, if you look at these hate rallies, does any reasonable person have any doubt in their mind that if Trump again said, go out and start killing people, go out and start attacking journalists, which he has basically said, that they wouldn't do it? And again, thinking about this moment and this enemy of the people moment, and I mean, that's really important research, thinking about how these right-wing hate groups have splintered. We need to, again, stop wringing our hands. Again, the mainstream corporate news media types. The New York Times today had a piece basically trying to whitewash the Republican Party's association with Nazism. There's a reason that David Duke and other neo-Nazis, Richard Spencer and white supremacists, are attracted to the Republican Party. Because they agree with them. And the Republicans, for the most part, going back to the Southern strategy, agree with them as well. They're just upset about the style and the presentation. And that goes all the way up to Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you see this going, Chauncey? And what's your biggest concern?
Well, I don't think this ends well. As I said, I've spoken to many historians and others about this moment. To some, this will sound dramatic, but I don't see this ending without some sort of civil unrest, quite frankly. And now the question then becomes, what is the scale? We've already seen killings and murders. We saw that in Charlottesville. We saw that in Portland. And another important issue we have to talk about with the far right, who are increasingly the center of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party is embracing these people's strategies, they're embracing their policies. Again, there's a huge overlap in the Venn diagram, is we need to have an honest conversation about how America's police are infiltrated and allying with these white supremacists and neo-Nazis. Across the country, there's been some great research on this. We saw this over the weekend. Who do the police protect? The gun-toting right-wing thugs.
Yeah.
Because why? Because they see them as being more representative of the mainstream. And that's, again, not me, you know, playing with a riff here, right? Sort of just working with conjecture and rhetoric. We've had research where they basically interviewed the police and looked at internal documents, and the police said, yeah, we side with the neo-Nazis and these violent right-wingers because, quote-unquote, they're more American than the folks who are protesting them.
Well, we heard from some of the folks who were involved in the protests in Portland over the weekend that I can't make this as an absolute assertion. This is, you know, more in the category of somebody told me, but that the police and the right wingers here in Portland had actually communicated, and you know, had a kind of a pact. Don't worry, everything's going to be good. And thus, the you know, the guy who got shot in the head, he had a helmet on with a mm-hmm. tear gas canister, was one of the left wing protesters, as opposed to one of the right wing guys. And this kind of stuff going on. This is what you're saying is happening all over the country.
Oh, yes, and it's remarkably underreported. I mean, I think there's another thing that's going to come out once social demographers start looking at the data. I think we have seen a remarkable rise in interpersonal violence related to Trump's campaign and presidency. And I think also it's going to come out, again, underreported because there's always a lag, that once we get the data from the FBI and local police, who, again, think about how police report data, some of that data is remarkably unreliable, and they try to sit on it just like they do with violence where police are killing innocent people in the street. I think you're going to see a lot of murders and assaults by Trumpsters and their allies, these neo-Nazis and white supremacists, against black and brown folks, immigrants, and others. And we've already seen the murders. And going back to your point about the police in Portland, another huge underreported story, they're going to have another anniversary of the Charlottesville White Supremacist Hate Festival, that horrible riot that killed Heather Heyer in D.C., and they were actually going to have separate trains for Kluxers, white supremacists, and neo-Nazis. Those are our tax dollars. And thank God the brothers and sisters in the local transit union in D.C. dropped a dime on this. They want to use state and public money to protect these fascists.
Well, you know, the first piece I read on that was not that they were trying to do it to protect them, but rather to segregate them so that there wouldn't be violence in the metro system in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think the practical function of that is basically that we're spending public monies to protect these folks, right? And I mean, it's a double insult in a lot of ways, because who's instigating the violence? Who has the guns? We saw that in Portland. It's these white supremacists and neo-Nazis. They're the ones who are escalating the violence. And to have black and brown folks, the majority of whom work in the transit system down there in D.C., to have to sit there and escort and use public money to protect these bigots, it's abominable. But again, it's part of a pattern where this hate is being normalized.
Yeah, and we're also seeing things like, you know, the murder of Nia Wilson, for example, underreported, it's spurred some protests and whatnot, but it's not the kind of national story you would expect. At the same time that, for example, the gun violence in Chicago, where you live, has been heavily reported. I think it's the right wing's favorite, chant, I guess. Thoughts on those?
Well, I mean, that's just part of a pattern, right? So look at black and brown folks and say, look at Chicago, and use all sorts of racial slurs. Go to Stormfront, go to Fox News comment sections. But then when you flip the script and say, okay, we have a problem across the country with gun violence, and never mind where these guns are coming from, Indiana, let's talk about the violence in this country, in mass shootings, again, disproportionately committed by white men, especially right-wing Trump supporters. I mean, those are huge underreported stories where you look at the horrible massacres at these schools the last few. A lot of these men had connections, these young teens and boys. They were advocates of Donald Trump. They were his supporters. So, I mean, that's just a lazy, lazy, lazy deflection to hide the fact that a lot of these Trump voters, again, thinking back to the Republican Party, where conservatism and racism is now one and the same thing, that they don't want to speak the truth about the real social dynamics of this country.
Yeah, and the conservatives who don't want to buy into this are left just basically being corporatists. Chauncey DeVega, ChaunceyDeVega.com. Thank you, Chauncey.
Always a pleasure.
Great talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 18 minutes past the hour. And I'd like to recap some of the news of the day and some of the stuff that's going on. I mentioned Nia Wilson, this 18-year-old woman who, along with her sister, she was killed. Her sister was stabbed. And her sister, Latifa, injured and stabbed on the BART, the train system in San Francisco. And, you know, in fact, when it first happened, I was looking at the story and going, well, we don't have evidence that this is a racially motivated attack. Now they've arrested a white guy for it, so, you know, it's looking more and more like it was. And it was one of several murders on the trains. Other things going on. The Iran sanctions are kicking in today. This is something to absolutely keep your eyes on, because if World War III begins, it may well begin in the Persian Gulf at the Straits of Hormuz with Iran shutting down the flow of oil out of that area. And, I mean, literally World War III. If Iran shuts down the Straits of Hormuz, and then the United States or Israel or both, or Saudi Arabia for that matter, and attacks Iran, Iran fights back, Russia comes to their aid, pretty soon you've got a full-out shooting war and what could become a nuclear war. So keep very careful track on that. Donald Trump tweets out about the wildfires in California. This is incredible. He says, California wildfires are being magnified and made so much worse by bad environmental laws. Must tree clear to stop fire spreading. He means must clear trees, but, you know, this the timber industry has been saying this for years, you know. If you don't want to have wildfires, you got to get rid of the trees. Right. It's like if you don't want people to drown in the rivers, drain the rivers. This is how bad it gets. Speaking of Saudi Arabia, they just expelled the ambassador from Canada, the Canadian ambassador, because this Saudi Arabian activist by the name of Badawi, and I hope he's not related to our old friend who used to be a regular guest of mine, who I know is Saudi. But in any case, he's been arrested in Saudi Arabia and sentenced to 1,000 lashes and years in prison for, quote, insulting Islam, a progressive activist inside Saudi Arabia. This is, just wicked bad stuff. And, terrible, terrible stuff. And how we can say that, you know, we're just all about defending Saudi Arabia in the region just because they sell us oil and we don't care about their civil rights. This all started out, Krista Freeland, who's been a guest on this program, wrote a brilliant book about the rise of the uber rich. I think it was called Plutocrats. I'm quite sure it was called Plutocrats. She is now the foreign minister for the country of Canada. And over the weekend, or a couple of days ago, she tweeted out her concern about Mr. Badawi being arrested in Saudi Arabia. And this is the Saudis saying, how dare you interfere in our domestic policies? How dare you tell us that we can't arrest our own dissidents? Meanwhile, the Chinese dissident, YY, or Weiwei, forgive me, I don't have the story in front of me, studio, he's a relatively famous artist. He's the guy who designed the Bird's Nest Olympic Stadium in Beijing. They started tearing apart his studio last week. This actually made international news. So we'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. 23 minutes past the hour. I was going to play this James Baldwin clip for Chauncey, but it's just as good to play it for you, so you can check this out. This is James Baldwin speaking on the issue of race in the United States. Now, you know, keep in mind, this was, probably after the Civil Rights Act, but in that neighborhood of time. I'm not exactly sure when this was. It could have even been in the 70s. But it's just such a brilliant articulation. I wanted to share it with you.
So why must we always concentrate on color or religion or this? There are other ways of connecting men.
Once you turn your back on this society, you may die. I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Other news of the day, some just interesting things I want to share with you, just catch you up. This falls into the category of, wow, what a coincidence. Donald Trump, on August 5th, tweeted that his son actually was trying to conspire with a Russian lawyer representing the Russian government to obtain information that would be destructive to Hillary Clinton to use in a political campaign, which, by the way, is clearly and explicitly against the law. August 5th, 1974. So Trump releases the information that probably will bring down his presidency. And on that same day, August 5th, 1974, that's the day that Richard Nixon released the White House tapes under order from the Supreme Court. What is it about August 5th? It's amazing. We'll see how this plays out. But I find it just fascinating. I told you about Saudi Arabia. Okay. The Amazon is asking cities all around the United States, they've got 20 cities now, saying, yeah, we'd love you to come to our town. We'll give you a lot of money. We'll give you tax breaks. We'll make you very profitable. It'll be just wonderful. Only problem, it's being done in a privatized fashion. This from today's New York Times. The headline, cities offers for Amazon base are secrets even to many city leaders. Jared Evans, Julie Cresswell writes, a member of the Indianapolis City Council, is proud that the city is among the 20 finalists for the most coveted prize in the country, the planned second headquarters of Amazon. He does, however, have one small question. What financial incentives did his city, Indianapolis, dangle in front of Amazon? What have I been told, Mr. Evans said? Absolutely nothing. Yes, he's on the city council. The bids, Julie Cresswell writes for the New York Times, the bids were handled by a local private chamber of commerce affiliates. They aren't required to make their negotiations public. They're not covered by the Freedom of Information Act or state open records laws. And so you get these, this is Leslie Poole, a city council person in Austin, Texas. I don't know what we offered Amazon in terms of financial incentives. So the private chambers of commerce are negotiating these deals on behalf of the cities, and the cities have no idea what's being offered, but they're going to have to pay it. And we're talking billions. New Jersey, $7 billion. Maryland, $8.5 billion, given to Amazon.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's like privatization has just run amok. It's gone nuts. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jared in Downington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, what's on your mind today?
Yes, hello, Tom. I want to talk about the concept of, quote, free speech and deplatforming, because just recently...
Free speech and what?
Hours ago.
Deplatforming. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Jared.
Oh, sorry. Okay, you can hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, deplatforming. I want to talk, because a couple hours ago, Alex Jones is YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and other social media outlets were permanently
banned. Podcast, too.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been permanently banned and removed from the air. And I'm saying I think this is a really good thing for our democracy, because Alex Jones is effectively a form of cancer. He has been, I would argue, actually, that the reason we have Trump is because of Alex Jones. And what do I mean by that?
Jared? Jared just vanished. Jared, if you can hear me, call right back. I hope that we're not having a systems failure here, because that might be a conspiracy. Roger in Bisbee, Arizona. Hey, Roger, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Hey.
I'm was impressed with the article that you just had with Chauncey DeVega, and it made me think about some things that have happened over the years. I kind of have seen what Chauncey's talking about. When I was in the military, I was kind of appalled to see what was happening with the folks coming into the military to get the training, to get thrown out. All they really wanted was the training, and they'd get out on a bad conduct discharge or whatever the case may be. But I think
you mean right wingers coming in just to get military training?
Yes, huh. That happened a lot. A lot of the guys that came in, they just wanted the basic training. They wanted to know how to use the guns. They wanted to know the tactics. And then they'd get thrown out.
Wow.
And then they'd show up in the right wing side of the house. I think the Southern Poverty Law Center did an article on that several years ago. That's
pretty amazing. I mean, I can't imagine, going through, joining the Army just to learn how to shoot a gun. I mean, there are shooting ranges all over this country that would be glad to teach you how to shoot a gun.
It's not just shooting the gun. It's learning the tactics. It's learning about the high-powered weapons. It's learning about the explosives and a lot of the other things that we're seeing employed.
Yeah, but explosives aren't taught in basic training. I mean, but in any case, you were going somewhere with that thought, Roger. Where were you going?
Well, the thought I was really going with is this has been building for a long time. What we're seeing happening now, I think, I think the same thing has been happening in the police arena as well as it was in the military. And we're seeing that. And I think that's what Chauncey DeVega was pointing out, is that we're beginning to have the empirical evidence now that some of this stuff's been going on for quite some time. Progressives or liberals, of course, have always been held in the Republican side or the liberal side as, or not the liberal side, but the conservative side as, you know, not really being involved in and always wanting to avoid any kind of aggressive action.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking we need to look at our progressive history, some of the things progressives had to do over the years to establish our rights and establish our democracy, so to speak. And we need to start looking a little bit more into what it's going to take to defend this democracy.
So you're talking about people arming themselves?
Well, I'm talking about people arming themselves. They're not, you know, I mean, that sounds like a really overt thing.
Yeah.
What I'm really talking about is liberals need to have a little bit of a change of thought process. They need to be thinking more in terms of getting shot on the BART, you know, being more attentive of what's happening around you. If that means you need to, you know, get a concealed weapons permit in your state, if you can do that, or if you see that happening around you, you need to be prepared. Because if you're not prepared, if the proverbial stuff hits the fan, you're out and you're going to get shot. You're
going
to get
God
killed.
Forbid.
You have no defense.
Roger, I get what you're saying, and there's an argument, I think, to be made for particularly people who are fairly high profile. I know a fellow talk show host here in Portland has a concealed carry permit and always has his gun with him, and I get that. But, you know, violence in general, I look back at the 60s, and you see where the Black Panthers, who were not violent, but they used weapons to make a point, particularly back in the 60s in California, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. That was, like, brilliant political theater. On the other hand, when a faction of SDS, and by the way, that was on behalf of essentially oppressed people, of, you know, Black people in the United States. On the other hand, when a bunch of white people from SDS split off and formed the Weather Underground, you got these, you know, privileged white college kids who were going out and blowing up buildings and things, it set the movement on behalf of left-wing policies, right? We're going to blow up buildings to bring racial equality and health care for all to America. That was, in my opinion, a huge mistake. So, you know, my thoughts on that. But, Roger, thank you for your call. Jared, you wanted to finish your thought here?
Yes. I wanted to, Alex Jones, I am support deplatforming Nazis like Alex Jones, because they are a cancer on this society, namely that they were the ones, prior to even Trump running, he was the one talking about, you know, we should be friendly with Russia, we should be subservient to Russia, along with Michael Savage, who were the ones who basically created Donald Trump using this racist rhetoric, like, you know, these Central Americans are coming over the border.
Right. Well, they weren't alone in that, Jared. I mean, you know, right-wing hate radio pretty much right across the spectrum got on the Trump train really early, and I would say helped ride him to the victory in the primaries, along with CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, and MSNBC, and Fox, obviously. But all the other networks, they gave him $2 billion worth of free publicity during the primaries and during the general election.
But has any Republican ever cultivated the conspiracy theory vote before, prior to Trump, mobilizing millions of these Alex Jones psychopaths in the country?
I don't know. And I mean, you could go back to the 70s, the assassination of Allen Berg. I mean, there's you know, it's possible, but I think it's extremely unlikely. But I don't know what we do with that, Jared, other than say, you know, if you're a Nazi and you've got a radio or TV show or a conspiracy, many platforms don't want you on there. You know, Facebook doesn't want you on there, Twitter doesn't want you on there, etc. But I don't think that it's necessarily because Alex Jones is like a right winger or even necessarily a Nazi, although I think Nazi is probably beyond the pale. But it's that he's constantly, or he has a history of saying things that aren't supported by the evidence. And by saying them, he is he's putting people's lives at risk, particularly when he went after the families of the Newtown, you know, the Newtown families and whatnot. And So that's a, you know, a strong argument to deplatform somebody. You are actually putting people's lives at risk. I stand behind everything I say on this program. And you know, somebody calls and says, you know, you got that story about so-and-so or such-and-such wrong. I'll put them on the air. We'll correct ourselves when we're wrong. I want people who are listening to this program, who are watching this program, to feel a high level of confidence that what I'm telling them is the truth. I don't think that that's what Alex Jones does. I think what he's characterized himself. There's a book that has we had the author of it on maybe 10 years ago, that has a chapter in it about Alex Jones. The guy, you know, followed Alex Jones around for a few months as he was writing this book about all these different conspiracy theorists. And Alex Jones was saying, I'm just a performer. You know, this is just theater. And, you know, whether he's not so much saying that anymore, but if you're taking it as performance or if you're taking it as, you know, crackpot stuff, it kind of doesn't matter. If he's also claiming that it's news and it's fact and it's not, then that's a good reason not, you know, to deplatform him, to take him off. Am I making sense here, Jared?
Yes.
I'm saying do it based on whether it's true or not and whether it's dangerous or not, not based on whether it's left or right or however he's trying to position himself ideologically, because I don't think he's that much of an ideologue. I think he's an authoritarian who's looking, and a conspiracy theorist who's looking for an audience. And the fact that we're talking about him is giving him more of an audience, which is why I generally don't talk about Alex Jones.
Yes.
So.
But I think it is good that we at least call these people out who are doing this, because they have been, as I've been predicting, a lot of this stuff that Trump ran on, all this conspiracy theory garbage and the QAnon stuff, all this originally came from, you know, Alex Jones's site. And I also believe that QAnon is a Trump official. I've come to that conclusion.
Now, let me give you some information on QAnon that'll blow your mind. This is Brian Broderick is a reporter over at BuzzFeed News, and he tracked down, there was a novel called Q that was published in the 1990s. It was written by three Italian leftists, Roberto Bui, Giovanni Catabria, and Federico Guglielmi, under the name of Luther Blissett. And in this novel Q, this character who is inside the International Monetary Fund is dropping breadcrumbs and helping to reveal this international conspiracy. And it was a huge hit among the anarchist anti-globalization movement in the late 90s. And he's of the opinion, these three writers, they told this reporter, quote, "Dispatches signed Q, allegedly coming from some dark meanders of top state power, are exactly like the dispatches in our book." So it looks like this was a left-wing punking prank against to the right wingers, and the right wingers grabbed it and said, "Oh yeah, okay, this must be true." And the danger now is that the right wingers, no matter, you know, even when you come out and tell them, "Hey, it's a left wing joke that you fell for," they're not going to believe it, and you know, that's going to take us down. Jared, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. It's always good to hear from you, Chris in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, did you catch the Times article this morning that they did about Oregon and Portland in general, and how, because, here in Oregon, we all kind of know this, that this is a very, very white state, and really Multnomah County, even Washington, Clackamas, and Clark are very solidly red in a lot of parts, and Portland still has a lot of work to do with respect to.
Yeah, Portland has Portland was a really rough city in its early history. I mean, right up until probably the last 30 or 40 years. And it was, a lot of people, it was a port. You had a lot of dock workers and things. I mean, people in Portland brag about the fact that we've got more strip clubs than churches. And so it's got a kind of a rough history, and it's also got a right-wing white racist history. The Klan was really big here. The Nazi movement is really big here. So yeah, I didn't read the article, but
yeah,
I know.
You got a major right wing host, up there in Portland. In any event, I kind of wanted to speak to dog whistle racism. You were actually the first one that kind of told me about it, and I was doing a little bit of reflection over the weekend and figured out the way that you're going to get like the swing vote and the moderates is to actively denounce the dog whistle stuff. I feel like yep. with moderates and people that are low information, if the Republican Party starts the soft dog whistle, like the Mexicans are coming here and taking your jobs, right? That doesn't sound like they're sending murderers, rapists, and thieves, and some are good people, I guess. That was more so. So my thing is that you placate moderates with all this really soft stuff, and then you get them on the edge, and then you're like,
well, that's what they've been doing since Nixon, you know, and since Reagan in a big way, since Manafort was running Reagan's campaign or participating in Reagan's campaign along with Lee Atwater. Thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 48 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman program will be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Charles. Oh, hey, Charles. I'm sorry. You're listening on SiriusXM. They're in a commercial break right now. Damon in Seattle. Hey, Damon, what's on your mind today?
You actually had an earlier caller that touched on many of the things I want to talk about, but I just want to talk a little bit about how the danger I see in the degree to which those of us on the left, and particularly the progressive movement, have really been sort of rallying behind media talking points regarding gun control and, like, assault weapon bans and things of that kind. And I just wanted to reiterate the idea that, you know, when you look at who is the most armed in this country, and when you look at the danger of the extreme right wing and the fascist tendencies that are, and straight up, you know, fascist goals that these people are putting out, you know, for the left to buy into the programming on guns equal bad and we need all these additional restrictions, I feel is kind of naive and dangerous, especially when you look at the fact that racist, you know, right-wing criminal justice policies have already invalidated large swaths of people who might have an inclination towards social justice from being able to own firearms, in terms of criminal convictions, medical marijuana cards, things of that kind. And I just think it is important for people to realize that when one faction of this country seems to be preparing for war and the other faction is preparing for a debate, it seems like it does put us in kind of a precarious position long term.
Yeah, I get that. And yet you're going to find a lot of people who simply have no interest in arming themselves you know, I don't want to be doing the NRA's work for them here, Damon.
Well, no, I'm not a member of the NRA, and I don't exactly think they're good guys. In fact, I mean, they're kind of part of the problem in the sense that they're not really a gun rights organization so much as they are.
No, I get that, but my point is they're all about selling guns, making profits for the gun manufacturers who to whom they owe their existence. And
well, it's not just the gun manufacturers, though. I mean, there's definitely, like, the fact that they have not really done anything to come to the aid of people of color who have had their Second Amendment rights infringed, you know, people yeah. who've been killed for, there's a racist component to the NRA that makes them beyond the pale in
sure.
many ways. But a thing I wanted to point out, like, as you mentioned, many people don't have an interest in arming themselves, but I think the message that I would like to put out to those people is that those of us who abhor violence, that for those who abhor violence to concede its means to those who do not abhor violence is kind of a dangerous thing. Like, the fact that we on the left tend to be anti-war, anti-violence, pro-peaceful solutions, to me is precisely the reason why the left above needs to get right with defending themselves and potentially their nation, because
well,
we really are.
You know, what Gandhi would tell you is the minute that you pick up that gun, you have surrendered your ability to have moral persuasion. That peaceful protest, even if it leads to your being a martyr, is always going to be more effective than violent reaction.
Oh, no, I 100% agree with you that peaceful means are the way to go for the time being. My point is that we currently have a very fascist government, a overly religious and right-wing, racist, you know, police force, and massive legions of militia people who are could be potentially effective brown shirts in some kind of a fascist, you know,
yeah.
takeover.
No, I've been writing about this, but it's still, you know, that's not enough to make me, or I'm guessing a lot of other people think, oh, gee, I got to buy a gun. Damon, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I'm a little frustrated today, though.
Okay, with what? What's up?
With this Donald Trump thing. I mean, if he comes out and says that his son had a meeting, now he's coming clean, that Don Jr. had the meeting and it was opposition research, first of all, it's against the law. So we're not talking about collusion. He didn't collude, but he definitely conspired.
Yeah.
And, you know, he should go to jail for that. And I've been asking you over and over, how come it seems like the power of the people that vote Democrat, how come our power have been usurped? You know, it seems like I would think that Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or any other bulldog that we have that's supposed to be out there on the left, you know, how come we're asking this man to step down now and get out of there?
Well, there's a number of Democrats who are, Charles. There's a lot of them. And by the way, the other shoe that is falling right now out of the White House, and this I've only seen this in one news source, so I don't know. I can't say that I'm absolutely certain that this is true. But my understanding is that Donald Trump has canceled all his travel plans and that Sarah Huckabee Sanders has not yet scheduled a press conference for today, and that the White House has gone into major lockdown freakout mode because yesterday Donald Trump admitted that his son had committed a federal felony and claimed he didn't know anything about it. You got Michael Flynn, who he and his son were working, it's alleged that they were conspiring with the Russians. And when his son got dragged into it, Michael Flynn said, you know, if you're going to prosecute my son, I'll turn state's evidence and I'll go to jail. Just leave my son out of this. Remember that, Charles?
I remember that.
Okay. So then Donald Trump comes out yesterday and says, oh, you want to prosecute my son? Yeah, this is the crime he committed. And by the way, I knew nothing about it. Leave me alone. It's like, really? So,
you know, this is past ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I just got to say to any right wing out there that wants to have insurrection, we've already killed Nazis back in the past, like World War II, and we've definitely killed Confederates back in the past. Those stars and bars.
Oh, Charles, I'm going to cut you off right there. I don't even want people talking like that on this show. It's just, this is, you know, threatening to kill people is wrong. It's illegal. I mean, this is, you know, Brian Stelter was threatened I think it was Friday. Somebody called in a C-SPAN and said that they were going to shoot Brian Stelter and Don Lemon. And it's like, stop already. We've all got to stop and say, no. You know, and I had a caller a little while ago saying, oh, it's time for, you know, liberals to start buying guns. No. I mean, you know, if you're inclined, but broadly, no. The response to violence should not be violence. It should be, you know, law enforcement. It should be strengthening our national dialogue and debate. And yeah, you know, this guy said, oh, people want to declare war on you and you want to have a conversation. I think we still need to have a conversation, and I think that we need to have strong laws that will take down the people who are trying to declare war on us and have those laws well enforced. And we need to clean up our police departments as well in that regard, to the extent that there's a problem there. But, you know, most of our police departments are pretty solid. And I was, you know, I'm frankly surprised by the whole thing with the Portland Police Department, because we've got a relatively progressive, you know, police chief in this town. So anyhow, we'll be back. It's the top of the hour. We've got... Rick Wilson's going to be with us right after the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.